Am I hosting?
What's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Eli Cooper, joined by my guy once again, Mike Bazic. How's it going, bro?
It's going good. I've got my patented Cabernet, even the Eagles glass, just for you, buddy. You know, as Philly's playoff NBA hopes are starting to dwindle, we're going to talk about it. Hold on. We're going to talk about it later. But I broke out the Eagles glass for you. But I'm doing good. I'm doing good, my boy.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the deep depression that the Sixers continue to put their fans through every year. We're also going to get into last night's games, the Lakers and the Suns. Not much to talk about the game specifically, but that is an interesting series. Same with Blazers, Nuggets. We'll get into that a little bit as well. Give you guys a little preview of the Nets versus Bucks, and then talk about Coach K hanging them up. But first, make sure you guys hit that subscribe button. If you're watching us on the YouTube channel, make sure you subscribe to our channel and turn on post notifications so you know when we go live or when new episodes drop. And if you're listening on the audio platforms, make sure you guys are subscribed to us there as well and leave a rating or a review to help the podcast, you know, reach new audiences. So thank you guys for tuning in to episode 70 of the All In Podcast. And let's just jump right into it. Let's get a playoff update. This is the first time we've actually gotten to talk about the playoffs a little bit, and timing couldn't be better. We have some series coming down to the wire, most specifically probably the best series of the first round, in my opinion, which is the Suns and Lakers. Suns win by 30 last night. They were up by 30 at the half. Yeah. No Anthony Davis. Of course, he got hurt towards the end of game four. Or actually in the first half of game four, and then was ruled out it was more of a game time decision, but was ruled out about an hour or so before the game. So Suns did not let up at all and take a 3-2 series lead. And the numbers for a team that wins game five when it's tied 2-2 are significantly in the favor of the team that wins that game. Mm-hmm. So my question to you, Mike, with or without Anthony Davis, can the Lakers come back and win this series?
Yes, for sure. I think they can with. Without, it's going to be incredibly hard. And we saw it last night. Now, I'm not sure, you know, what LeBron James's mentality was coming into the game. I don't know if his idea was, well, let's see how it goes. And if it's not going well in the beginning, let's just take the foot off the gas and try to get AD back for 6 and 7 and try to win it that way. And that's really what happened, right? So the role players did not show up at all. KCP had a bagel. Schroeder had a bagel. LeBron did not seem incredibly engaged at the beginning of the game. He was shooting a lot of 30-footers, and it was kind of passive. It was, you know, kind of the word that was getting thrown around a lot today. And it was a good word for it. It was passive. But, you know, I think the credit has to go to the Suns, right? The energy that they brought was, you know, I'm not sure that even an aggressive LeBron could have matched what the Suns were doing. They were hitting all their shots. So I think the credit has to go there. Chris Paul, we've kind of like teeter-tottered on, is he hurt? Is he not hurt? When he plays bad, he's kind of hurt. When he plays good, maybe he's not hurt. He played great. You know, Devin Booker kind of had this like signature game that we had been hoping for. So he's kind of seesawed on the road and at home. He's played really well at home. Pretty average to okay on the road. So we'll see how he comes out in game six. But this was not close. The entire game, like you said, 30-point deficit in the second quarter. And it was, you know, the first quarter was kind of close. And then the Suns go on this 24-1 run, which is kind of like insane to think about. Like, imagine if that was the score to start the game rather than to happen like 6 or 7 minutes in, right?
Right.
We would be looking at that like, wow, that's kind of unbelievable, and it really was unbelievable. The Lakers just could not get anything going offensively. I think the Suns have also had some unsung heroes, particularly DeAndre Ayton. a guy who we've talked about for the past year of what he can be and how, you know, effective he can be. And we've talked about how adding Chris Paul to this team is only going to open things up for him and help him. And it's shown in this series anyway, even if it didn't translate in the regular season, which I think he did improve. It has definitely translated in this series. He's been amazing, really. He's been fantastic. So I'm going to say that the Lakers can come back, right, because we do not doubt LeBron James in this podcast. I will say, if they do not have AD, and I think you're going to at least touch on this AD injury, what's going on with that, but I think if they have AD, they can come back because, you know, suddenly there's a new physicality there. I think AD is the best playoff defender we have just from what he can do from not only a man-to-man perspective, but also from a rim protecting, from a help side protecting. He frees up so much on defense and gives you so much more cushion to maybe these great guards that the Suns have with Paul and Booker and even Cameron Payne, who's an unsung hero in this, right? You know, and they drive, and you know, it's a lot different when you have Anthony Davis down there. I know we were supposed to pretend that Andre Drummond was this great player. He's not a good player, right? A good text I got last night is, you know, what is Andre Drummond good for? And our friend Taylor from the All In NBA Pod, he said he's only good for blocking shots after the whistle. So, you know, basically that's what he does is block warm up shots after the whistle. He does not give you much. So I'm not writing the Lakers off yet. If they say AD is not playing Game Six, which I think it's a good chance he does play, then I think they get Game Six, and we're having another discussion before Game Seven.
Yeah. Without him, no. I think they're done next game.
Yes.
If he's not healthy. If he is, I'm still not 100% sold. I mean, he did play well in the two games that he was like, two of the three games, I should say, because he was terrible in game one.
Yeah.
But in game two and game three, he was excellent, and they won both of those games. So my biggest issue is not only is he going to be even if he's healthy and he's in the lineup, how healthy is he? You know what I mean? Like, are we getting game one AD, who's like lethargic, you know, after missing a game in a couple of days? Or are we getting game two and game three AD? Honestly, that's what matters more than whether he's in the lineup or not. Because he has not played consistently good basketball since he's gotten back. He's been pretty up and down, you know, especially for the standard that he has set for himself. So I would say, like, yeah, if he's healthy, that's you have a chance. But he needs to play well. He needs to be a superstar in order for them to win.
Yeah.
And that's not a guarantee that he's going to be great for two games, even if he's in the lineup. So that's my biggest concern with him. This Suns team with Chris Paul, like, healthy, as long as Chris Paul can, like, kind of do what he needs to do, like, at bare minimum.
Yeah.
You know, then having him out there is a plus. Like, for a couple of games, it was like, why is he even out there? Like, just let Cameron Payne play because he's not really helping his team. But I think the last like couple of games, he's kind of, you know, getting over that injury and he's getting back to himself. So, you know, barring any injuries, I think Phoenix, I don't want to say Phoenix has this in the bag, but like, if I had to like give them a percentage, I'd say it's like 70-30 Phoenix.
Including if AD comes back?
If AD comes back, then it's like 60-40.
Well, did you see the video of him trying to warm up?
It looked bad.
It looked bad. I mean, he was trying to do, like, basically lateral slides, and almost with every step, he was grimacing. When he was shooting some mid-range jumpers, you can tell he was not trying to land firmly on his feet. So I think it's an issue, even if he comes back.
Yeah, and, like, that's the thing. Is like, groin injuries aren't something that just go away magically. Like, this is something that's going to stick with him the entire postseason, if we're being completely honest. Something he's going to have to monitor and deal with the entire postseason, even if they get out of this round. So, like, even if he comes back, there's no guarantee he stays in the lineup or stays in the game for the whole game. So I don't have a ton of faith. It does not look good for the Lakers because they need him, and they need him fully healthy. And I just – you know, Charles Barkley has started calling him Anthony Street Clothes Davis, and that might actually be an accurate nickname for him. That might be the best nickname you can give him right now.
Yeah.
The guy just can't stay healthy.
Well, and this is the story of Chris Paul's career too, right? His whole playoff career is always just getting hurt in the playoffs. Now, Davis made it through last year, not without some scares, right? There's no player who goes down and we're more nervous than when Anthony Davis goes down because of the riddled injury past that he has. So, you know, this is now a part of him. This is now when we think of Anthony Davis, we think of these injuries.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, if you go back a couple of episodes ago, the reason I picked the Warriors over the Lakers in the first playing game was simply because I thought he might get hurt in the middle of the game. Like, that was, you know, I was like 3-4 games off.
Yep.
It's only a matter of time. You know, it's sad to say, but, you know, I have some experience with big men constantly being hurt. So I get it. I understand Lakers fans.
We'll get there.
I empathize. All right. So should we talk a little bit about Damian Lillard and the Nuggets last night?
We got to.
Yeah, got to. So the Blazers, despite an incredible night from Damian Lillard, go down 3-2 in the series to the Nuggets. Dame had 55, hit clutch shot after clutch shot after clutch shot to do whatever he could. Forced it into double overtime with two game-tying shots.
Yep.
And then they just couldn't hold on when the Nuggets, they were down 3 in double overtime, and the Nuggets were just like, enough. We're trapping him at half. Yeah. He gives it up to CJ, who steps out of bounds. He was not very good last night. You know, and obviously, like, this team is bad defensively, but when he doesn't get help from his other guys, the Blazers are they don't really have a chance. Right. Yeah. And they put up 140 points last night, you know, granted in two overtimes. But in those two overtimes, he didn't get much help at all.
No, he did not get much help at all. And the defensive thing is what really stuck out, especially, you know, I know that everyone's talking about Dame today and rightfully so because of the game he had and all of the clutch shots he hit. But with the real MVP, please stand up, Nikola Jokic. With the 38-11-9 piece, and really was making superstar plays the entire game, the entire overtime, the pass he had to Porter for that game-winning three, like all of the passes and the shots he was making. Granted, you know, and this is the issue with Portland, right? They just don't have the defenders. They didn't know what to do with him. They were throwing Carmelo was guarding him down the stretch, like probably not what you want. Right. Yeah. Probably not. You know, they were throwing, you know, canner at him because they just didn't know what else to do. Of course, he can't stay with them. And then they, you know, they're trying the doubles, it just goes to show, like, Dame was so spectacular. He's really the story here today. Like, you know, when we start talking about point guards, you know, it's, and we've just said this before, but it's him and Steph are the only two that can do this for an entire game. You know, Kyrie has his moments where he can take over for, you know, 5 or 6, 7 minute stretches. But for an entire game like this, and then for all of the clutch shots, which is what Dame has become so famous for, you know, and then eventually, you know, they just start doubling in the half court and he has to give the ball up. And we see what happens in that double overtime. They only score 5 points. But this was the game of the playoffs so far, anyway, for me.
Yeah, definitely the game of the playoffs so far. You know, the high scoring. Back and forth shots down the stretch. What more could you possibly ask for in a playoff game, other than maybe for this game to start at 8 o'clock? I mean, it's brutal because all the best playoff games are happening in the West, and it's like you have to choose between being able to get up for work tomorrow, or staying up to watch these games, and it's kind of brutal. But yeah. I mean. If you brave through it, boy, did the Nuggets and Blazers treat you. This has been a great series in general. Yeah. They've gone back and forth. No one's really taken like a significant edge in this series. It's pretty much been back and forth each game. It's a tough series to pick out. I think the Nuggets are just slightly better defensively, and I think that's what's going to give them the edge. They might win this in like 6 or 7. You know, probably in 7. I think the Blazers still steal one more game, but like, you really can't put anything past Damian Lillard.
No.
And it's getting to the point where, if they lose this series, is it time to abandon the Dame and CJ experiment, or not even experiment, the duo? Because like, Don't get me wrong, yes. Like when it comes offensively, they're incredible, right? Like there's no doubt that they can coexist offensively. They've proven that, but neither of them are good enough defenders in that backcourt to get them just enough stops to win games.
Mm-hmm.
And now that you've added Norman Powell, I think he's a better fit besides Dame at the two. Maybe you can move CJ, get a two-way wing,
right.
And some bench pieces to give you some more depth, than what you have right now. Because it's just, honestly, at this point, it's just they can't get stops.
Yeah, and I think probably, even that assessment of, is it time to move on from CJ and Dame? That might have been 2 or 3 years ago.
Right.
When they got swept by the Warriors. And you could just tell that they were not a team that's going to get over the hump. And that's the thing, that we forget about this. These Warrior teams was Klay Thompson and how he played such great defense.
Yep.
All the time. And they had, Draymond on the backside to help, which certainly Portland doesn't have anybody like that. But Klay played such great defense that it made the duo of him and Steph Curry that much better, where you didn't have to worry about both of them not playing defense, where the Blazers cannot say the same thing for CJ McCollum, who I love, but he's an accurate boy 3-3-0. So, but also and Dame Lillard, it's tough when you have two smaller scoring guards on the court at the same time, and they're both really good. This might be the ceiling for that type of a build of a team, right? You think about how the Cavs are building with Sexton and Garland. Like, this might be the ceiling, and neither of those guys are as good as either CJ or Dame.
Right.
So, and if you're happy, getting bounced in the – making the playoffs every year, maybe you get to the second round some years, maybe some fan bases are happy with that, but I think we've seen what the ceiling is with these guys.
Yeah, and at this point, it's obviously Dame and CJ, they have their great relationship, but if you're Portland's front office, it's like, hey, and Dame's like a solid dude, right? So maybe he'll say no to this, but at some point you go to him and say, hey, man, we know that's your guy, but we really want to give you the best chance possible to win a championship here, whether that's even realistic here in Portland or not. But we want to move this guy and get some pieces that we think will better fit you to try to win a championship and see what happens. You know what I mean? Like, if Dame doesn't want him to go, then don't let him go. Yeah. But if he's okay with it, do what you got to do, because the guy deserves a shot. I don't think he's had a legitimate chance with any of the rosters that he had. I know he went to the Western Conference Finals a couple years ago. That was almost by default,
because
the Rockets were a 4 seed instead of the 2 or 3 seed that they should have been. And they never really had a chance to beat the Warriors, even without KD being healthy. So it was when has he ever had a legitimate, when you looked at the Blazers, team could really be one of the top 4 or 3 teams in the league?
Well, I think a lot of us were saying that before this season. Maybe not us, but a lot of the media were saying before this season, look at the moves the Blazers have put together. They were hot coming off the bubble last season, and then they get Nurkic back, they get Collins back, they add Robert Covington, and then you're looking at it and you're saying, oh, there's that some of that defense that they need. The trade deadline, they add Norman Powell, who's a really good player. Yeah. I think a lot of people were higher on the Blazers, but Nikola Jokic is the MVP for a reason. And also, when you look at the contributions that he's also gotten from, Michael Porter Jr. and Monte Morris last night.
Yeah.
And I am weirdly on the Monte Morris train, have been for a while, and I was happy to see him, really ball out.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he's pretty good. He's really good. I mean, I think he's almost as good as a backup point guard gets in this league, right? So that's probably his ceiling. But, yeah, I don't know, man. It's a shame that Dame hasn't had a better shot at it.
So who says no? CJ McCollum for Matisse Thybulle, Seth Curry, first-round pick.
Portland.
Portland says no to that. Yeah. What if we throw in Tyrese Maxey?
Portland says no.
Portland still says no to that?
Yeah, because they're basically at that point, they're out of playoffs. They don't get better from that trade, right? I think your best chance for making a CJ McCollum for Philly trade is Ben Simmons for CJ's trade up, or maybe they have to throw in a pick.
Yeah, I'll live with Ben Simmons shooting 5 for 20 from the line.
Uh-huh, hack a Shaq.
Which we'll get to that too. Yep. Anyway, so let's get into a little series preview. We have a second round matchup set already. Nets are gonna be taking on the Bucks. Sorry.
Yep.
Nets are taking on the Bucks in the second round, 2 versus 3 seed. Both of them finish their series relatively quick. Nets with a gentleman sweep last night of the Celtics, who were depleted by injuries. You've been pretty confident that the Nets are coming out of the East. So what are your thoughts on this matchup here with Milwaukee?
I'm less confident after seeing Milwaukee in the first round. I mean, they look scary.
Go ahead, right? Speak on it.
Yeah. So Jrue Holiday has been, I think, this is why they brought him over, right, for these playoff moments. And this defense, right, when we talk about defensive guards, it's your boy Ben Simmons, and then it's probably Jrue Holiday second on that list if we're not counting Thibault, who's more of a bench player. But so I think, like, Jrue Holiday's had a huge impact. And then offensively, giving them a third option who can not only, you know, score but can drive and create off the dribble, which is not something Chris Middleton does particularly well. While he has played very well, he did play very well against the Heat. He's just not that type of a player. I think, you know, having a guy like Holiday who can create off the dribble relieves a lot of pressure off of Giannis. The defense is going to be an issue for Brooklyn here. I'm not sure the matchups that they throw at Giannis and Middleton and Jrue Holiday, where I think I'm pretty confident in the matchups that the Bucks are going to throw back at the Nets. Not saying that the Nets won't be able to handle those, but it's going to be very tough when you have Giannis as a rim protector. Jrue Holiday, you can probably throw on either Kyrie or Harden and say, forget about it, you take them, and we'll try to handle the other two. Now, that's still a tall task to handle the other two, right? And that's what makes Brooklyn so lethal, is to have three of these guys where it's basically an all-star game, and they're just taking turns. So I'll be interested to see the lineups that Brooklyn throws out. Typically, throughout the season, when they've gone against the Nets, they've gone to a more small ball approach, right? So they'll use Giannis or Bobby Portis at the five, where in the first round they were using more Brook Lopez minutes. So it will be interesting to see how that goes. Now, you know, it's probably going to come down to some of these role guys, and who do you feel confident about to knock down open shots? Is it Brook Lopez / whoever it may be, Pat Connaughton or Brian Forbes? I don't love that. Yeah. But you look at the role guys for the Nets, it's not much better. So if it's a 3-on-3 battle, I still like the Nets a little bit for the firepower, but I'm definitely not as confident as I was.
Yeah, I mean, the Bucks looked incredible in the first round. I mean, they looked like a completely different team from last year. And I think one of the things is, I think they figured out that Giannis isn't your, like, go-to scorer, right? Like, he's your best player, but he's not your go-to scorer. That is Chris Middleton, and he has finally started to flourish in that role, right? Yes. Where maybe he wasn't ready for that last year. He's been excellent so far in the playoffs. He had a game winner in game one, and obviously the next three games weren't really close. But he's been great, in my opinion. Like you said, Jrue Holiday is one of the best defensive guards in the league, and also is great on the offensive end. I'd like to see him on James Harden, because if of the two guards in Kyrie and James, I think Harden is the more important to stop or slow down, right? Because he's the only one that gets other guys involved and going, right? So, like, I think he's the head of the snake. You want to cut the head of the snake off, and then kind of force Kyrie and KD not to beat you, but, like, to be just scorers and not really get anyone else involved. And I think that's where a lot of teams go wrong. You focus so much on stopping those three guys, and then other guys start to eat, and granted, if they get hot and what, like they can, you're going to lose anyway. So I'm more of a, limit James Harden, limit the other guys around them, and make two guys have unbelievable nights to beat you, which they can do, but make them have unbelievable nights to beat you in that case. And I agree with the matchups. I think are going to be interesting because I don't think Brooke Lopez is going to start in this series. I think it would be too easy for them to attack him on switches. So I don't see him starting, really even playing much in this series. Mm-hmm. I think they'll cut his minutes way down. I think we'll see more PJ Tucker, more Bobby Portis, at the five, playing at the, and Giannis obviously at the five. I think what really hurts the Bucks though, was the Dante DiVincenzo injury. And shout out Villanova, but one of the things is, like, even if he's not making shots, he's a good defender. He's a very good defender. And in a series where you need perimeter defenders as many as you possibly can have, him being out, I think, is going to hurt because Connaughton's going to give the effort, but I don't think he's as good of a defender as DiVincenzo is. So I'm assuming they're going to go – I'm assuming they're going to keep Connaughton in the lineup, and then I'm assuming they're going to go, like, P.J. Tucker or Portis at the five.
P.J. Tucker's an interesting one.
I think I'd go P.J. Tucker because there's times where the Nets like to go ultra small, right, where KD's essentially the five and they just play five out and then just, drive and kick to whoever gets helped off. P.J. Tucker is going to be the best equipped to handle that. And also PJ Tucker kind of bothers KD a little bit, he gives him some fits because he's the kind of defenders that bother KD are guys who are shorter than him, but stronger, right, and physical, and will get up underneath him and not let him get to his spots and be comfortable. So if it were me, I'm actually going to put PJ Tucker on him. I don't want Giannis picking up early fouls. Yep. So I'm starting with PJ Tucker on him. Put Giannis on, maybe Blake or something like that if he starts. I'm not sure who the Nets will go with their lineup.
Giannis has always done this. He's the help guy.
Except for this series.
He
took on Jimmy Butler. But normally, yes, you're correct.
So,
and that's the thing. So you let him start off as the help defender, maybe in crunch time if you want him on KD, sure. Maybe that's an option. So, I mean, they certainly have the matchups. They do have, the defenders who I think can really give the Nets big three fits. I'm taking the Bucks, man. I'm taking the Bucks.
Can I change my pick?
You're gonna
take the Bucks? I really didn't. I want to stick with the Nets because of the fact that I picked them before the playoffs started. I'll tell you this: I'm definitely going to be cheering for the Bucks, right? Because I'm not a fan of this super team thing that they got going on. I love that Giannis re-signed, but also I really was that impressed with the Bucks in the first round. So just know that I'm expecting the Bucks to win. I'm picking them. I'm kind of flip-flopping here, but information is power, and I got more information, and we saw, how good Jrue Holiday can be. So I'm going to pick the Bucks and cheer for them along with you. I think we're all cheering against the Nets here. And I also will say, to give the Nets credit, let me ask you this. Is this the best James Harden's ever been? So I think he still has all the same moves. He still got the bag he had in Houston, but the way he can get his teammates involved now is at a little bit different of a level where he's not really doing the Houston things. At times he will in spurts, right? And if it's just him out there, he will do that. But I think he's actually done a really, really good job this year.
So someone brought up a really good point recently about Trae Young, that Trae Young is turning into a winning player.
He is.
And I think that's what we're seeing from James Harden. I think we're finally seeing the best mix of superstar James Harden versus sixth man James Harden from OKC, right? Where at times James Harden had to take a back seat because there was Russ and KD, in front of him when he was in OKC. Then he gets to Houston. There's no back seat whatsoever to take to anybody at any point. And then they hired D'Antoni, and that system is all about one guy, maybe two guys doing everything, right? And now he's finally I mean, I guess D'Antoni's still there technically, and Steve Nash is the coach. But now it has, it does have a different feel. It's more now that there's two other guys who are actually on his level for the first time in his career. Like Russ and CP3 weren't on his level when they were there. They were clearly in the decline and still are. These are two, Kyrie and KD are, maybe not so much Kyrie, but definitely KD are on James Harden's MVP level, right? So that's, and I think it's where the one thing we kind of forgot about him is that he's always been a really good like facilitator and almost point guard, right? Like he can be a point guard in a true sense in today's NBA, at least, where, which is kind of what he was when he was a sixth man in OKC. He was, when he came in, he was a facilitator. He wasn't all about scoring. So I think we're kind of seeing him find that balance and becoming a winning player versus just a superstar who was putting up these ridiculous numbers. And it's great to see. It honestly is. Like all three of these guys obviously had sacrifices to make, and you know, that happens all the time. You know, so, and Steve Nash has found a way to best highlight all three of these guys' skills and assets, especially on the offensive end. Now it's kind of just about how do we do it on the defensive end. And I think this is the first time that they're really going to be tested on the on both ends of the floor, where they're finally going to have guys who can defend them and also get with them on the off. I mean, when they're on defense, right? Teams that are a team that's going to put pressure on them on the defensive end. And in year one, I think that's a really tough test to see in the second round.
Are these the two best teams in the league? I would say yes.
Well,
I know that you think with, Philly is good.
I would say with Embiid's injury, which we're gonna get to next. With Embiid's injury, I think these are the two best teams in the league. Unless like the Lakers dramatically get healthy out there. You know, and I do like the Suns a lot, but I don't think they can mess with either of these teams.
I don't think they can either, and I don't think and the Clippers have a case here. Right, so we don't have them on the agenda today, so I'll talk about it quickly. Like they flipped a switch where Kawhi Leonard has become, you know, this playoff player that we knew him to be in Toronto, that I expected him to be last year, and he was not. He is that player this year. He's been pretty unstoppable against Dallas so far. So I wouldn't be surprised if they ended up in the finals. I think they'd be a good matchup too.
I agree. Yeah. So, I mean, and they play tonight at 10. So, reminder, guys, for those of you listening in, all of this that we're talking about right now is being recorded on a Wednesday, June 2nd. So, Sixers and Wizards are playing their game 5 right now. Hawks and Knicks are playing their game 5 as we speak. So, keep that in mind when you're listening to this episode. And for those of you tuning in, again, make sure you guys are hitting that subscribe button or – if you're a gambling addict like Mike, head over to MyBookieAG and use the promo code ALLINPOD, all caps, ALLINPOD, to get 100% of your deposit match for anything over $50 or under $1,000. And you can bet on anything there. It's an offshore site. So anything you could possibly think of, you could probably find on MyBookieAG. So make sure you guys are using our promo code when you visit there over there at the store. So let's get into the depressing stuff, man. Let's talk about it. Embiid suffers a small tear in his meniscus. He was ruled out of game 5, which, like I said, is happening right now. Sixers are up 6 with 4 minutes left in the third. I think it's pretty safe to say they're still going to get out of the first round. But the Hawks are most likely the Hawks in the second round is going to be much tougher without Joel Embiid. Can they win in the second round without Embiid? Well, first off, they're calling him day to day. So I don't want to make it seem like he's out for the series, or out for the playoffs. However, I don't want to say like serious, but it's a significant knee injury that he's going to have to deal with for the remainder of the postseason, and he's not going to be 100%. Can the Sixers get out of the East? You didn't think they could when he was 100%.
Correct. Well, I think they could get out when he's 100%.
Okay,
if he's not 100%, I don't think that they can. I mean, we saw this in game four, right? They were a completely different team when he exited. You know, granted, they didn't, you know, it's hard to adjust on the fly to something like that. And maybe as the game plan goes on now, it looks like they're going to win tonight and wrap this up. You know, again, like Eli said, they're in the third quarter right now, but it looks like, you know, they're ahead. I'm going to assume that they close it out at home. So then he'll have some time to rest here, depending on when the second round starts. I'm hoping that he's able to recover from this. But, you know, this is a slight partial tear, a small meniscus tear is what they called it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they throw the word small in there. But the problem is it comes right before the words meniscus tear, which I don't think is ever small. It's never something to brush off. You know, the risk of re-injury is high. You know, and also like the fact that he'll probably just be favoring that other knee, you would imagine, right? So, you know, I don't know what kind of shots he'll take before the game. They've got all kinds of stuff for treatment. So it maybe not. But I would say if he's not 100%, it's going to be incredibly hard for them to get their offense going, especially if they play a team like the Bucks. They might be able to get through a team like Atlanta who with him at 70% because he's that much better than the defenders that they're going to be able to throw at him. But also I wouldn't be so sure about them beating them because Atlanta has looked really good. And that's another game that's going on right now. You know, they might close it out tonight. They're on the road. I'm thinking that they're going to get out of this first round series and it's going to be them. Trae Young, you know, you mentioned that he's become like this winning player. He has found out how to control pace in a way that, you know, we were hoping he would, right? That's kind of part of the maturation process. We were not always a fan of him and his play style, but he's able to control pace. He trusts his teammates more now, it seems, with Bogdanovich, who's been a huge help for them. DeAndre Hunter has shown so much from the, you know, we knew what kind of defender he was going to be, but now that he's added, you know, just even a little bit offensively, he becomes a serious threat. And then you've got Gallinari off the bench. You know, they have weapons, right, that they can throw at this Sixers team offensively. I think Philly probably still handles them, but I cannot imagine that they can beat either Brooklyn or Milwaukee, particularly Milwaukee, if Embiid is not 100%, not only because of the fact that Milwaukee's defense is so good, but also he would be an absolute key, vital piece in trying to slow down Giannis. So I think, you know, if he's not 100%, I do not see how they come out of the East. I'm sorry, buddy.
I don't either, you know, because this team is clearly – it was the case that I made for him as MVP. This team is not as good when he's not in the lineup or when he isn't fully healthy, you know. And to me, I think they are downplaying this injury more than what it might actually be, simply because it's the playoffs. If this was the regular season, he'd be out 3 to 4 weeks. Without a doubt, right? So 2 to 3 weeks at minimum, he'd be out, you know, just for precaution. So I'm thinking, like, best case scenario, he misses tonight. They win. They get, you know, rest him up. He probably sits out game one of the next series, right? To see what happens. And if they lose game one, then you bring him back for game two. If you win game one, you sit him out again game two. And see what happens there. Like, I think they're gonna kind of take this spot game by game and be like, well, how bad do we really need him?
Well, here's my thing.
And that's, I don't love that.
I don't love that either, especially like to sit. It's one thing if you win game one with him and then you're like, all right, game two, take it easy, right? Or even probably game three would be a better game to do that if you go up 2-0, because then you go, well, if we drop one on the road, it's no big deal. When you drop game one and you're the higher seed, right? And now you have to win 4 of 6 with 4 of those. Excuse me. Yeah, 4 of those coming on the road. Right? Am I wrong? 3 of those coming on the road. So you have to win 4 of 6, 3 of them coming on the road. That's incredibly hard. It's hard enough to it's hard enough to win 4 out of 6. You know, if you look at the percentages of teams that go up 1-0, if you look at the percentages of teams that go up 2-0, it's pretty staggering, right, that those teams normally win the series. And when you drop one at home, I don't think that you should ever in the playoffs, especially in the second round of the playoffs. It's one thing if you're playing Washington in the first round, you know, to say we don't need you tonight. Hopefully, if we lose, we lose. I just don't love that approach, especially in the second round for a team that's not had a ton of playoff success, for a team who's been for the most part disappointing in the playoffs. Right, there's a lot of pressure on Philly right now, and these players, and Simmons, and Embiid, and Doc Rivers too, who came in and he's kind of, you know, been anointed this savior for what he's done and turned them around into the one seed, right? Yeah. I mean, compared to Brett Brown, he's the best coach. Yeah, you guys. Absolutely. Yeah, you know what I mean. So, you know, there's a lot of pressure on him, and not only, you know, because of what he's done for you guys, but also like his past in the playoffs. You know, minus that one championship he had with Boston. Not a ton of playoff success, a lot of choking in the playoffs, a lot of underachieving in the playoffs for Doc Rivers. That's something that we've talked about. We talked about it before he got fired from the Clippers.
Yeah, we did.
Before he came over to the Sixers. But, you know, I think we liked the hire when it happened for these young guys, and it's proved out well. He was my pick for Coach of the Year. He's not going to win that award, although I think he does have a case for it.
Absolutely.
But you know, all that to say, I would not be so sure about this second round matchup if Embiid is not there, especially, you know, if you're saying let's not play him game one and see what happens.
Yeah, you know, it's this was the one thing that could really hold the Sixers back.
Absolutely.
You know, from contending. And it was also, you know, prior to the season, it was one of the reasons why when people talked about splitting up Ben and Embiid, one of the reasons that Embiid was the guy that I always said would be the guy to trade was it was for two reasons. It was, he has way higher trade value than Ben Simmons does. And two, he's always hurt in the playoffs. I guess it's like clockwork. And, you know, I'm not blaming him. I'm not calling him soft. I think he's the furthest thing from soft. So I want to make that clear. But he's 7'2", like 280 to 300 pounds, who moves like a guard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's only
not a good combo.
Yeah, like science isn't going to allow that to happen. You know what I mean? There's a reason why guys don't typically move like that. It's generally not good for the knees or back or your ankles. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. That's typically tough to – it's tough for those kind of guys to stay healthy and – you know, I think it's a decision that the Sixers might have to revisit, especially with another, you know, second round exit, if it ends up being, you know, you definitely got to reevaluate it. Cause at this point, like getting the one seed, right. And with Embiid missed 20 games this year on a shortened season, he missed 20 games again in the regular season and then got hurt again by the second round of the playoffs. That has literally been the case every year except for last year. And it's just like, at some point you have to say, yeah, that's not going to work for us.
Absolutely.
And pull the plug on it. And, you know, Daryl Morey is new to the organization. So like, he doesn't have all the scars of what that's been like, but everybody else that's been there and around that is going to be like, listen, we can't keep doing this. At some point we've got to do something different, whether it's like moving on from Ben, who's been, I don't think he's been bad this series at all, but like the free throws have been terrible, 5 for 20 from the line coming into the night. I don't know what he's shooting it now. And there's games where he hasn't been aggressive. Like, you know, I don't know. So maybe the only way I can see you not wanting to move on from Ben after this is if like while Embiid's hurt, he goes crazy. Like he plays a lot better.
Yep.
Which sometimes happens if he's aggressive. They played him at the five tonight. I do kind of like that without Embiid. I like him at the five as kind of a point center kind of thing, like kind of like Giannis. So I think they might be able to scrape by for a few games like that. But, you know, that certainly won't last. So
nope,
it sucks,
nope.
Man. It's the same thing year in, year out.
What did I tell you? What did I tell you all season, Coop?
I hope it's not as bad as cool. I think it is.
I tried to tell you all season they're gonna break.
You have, heart. Man.
Something
you have,
gonna
and
happen.
You know what? And like deep down, I've agreed. You know, because it's just over, it's Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not over, but like deep down, I'm always prepared, right? Like I was talking to my dad the other day, and he was like, "They're going to win it this year." He was like, and I'm like, and he's like, but it, and he was putting so much pressure on them to win it this year. And I'm like, listen, if they don't win it this year, I don't think it's the end of the world. I think the changes that we've made in the front office and coaching will last beyond this season. So like, I'm not super pressed on us winning it this year. But I am pressed on Embiid constantly getting hurt in the playoffs. That concerns me. But yeah. That's what I was telling him. I was like, I'm not super pressed on them winning this year. And that was just – it's because of things like this. This is why I'm like – I'm not sold that we will win it this year. And these are the kind of reasons why. So
Yep.
So let's move on to one of the garbage teams in the East, which is the Celtics. Little shade there, but Danny Ainge is resigning as president of basketball operations, and it looks like Brad Stephens might move into, I don't know if it's that specific role, but they're like basically a high front office position. They were supposed to announce it later on today. I did not see if they did announce exactly what Brad Stephens is going to be doing going forward, but he's going to be in the front office, and they did say he's going to have a part in choosing his replacement as coach, which is kind of weird, right? Like, hey, I don't really feel like coaching anymore. I don't really feel like coaching this team anymore. Well, maybe I'll just find someone else to do it.
Well, and apparently, so the Celtics have announced that he will be named president of basketball operations. So
he's going to take Danny's job.
He will take Danny's job. I assume that means he'll also take the GM role, because Danny was doing that as well when he was the president of basketball operations, I assume. I think it's a mistake. You know, like typically if someone fails as a coach, it doesn't always translate to being a good GM, right? But
Larry Bird.
He was a better coach, I think.
Yeah.
He took Indiana to the finals there in his like second season. So anyway, but I don't know. I'm interested in that, how it plays out. I will die on the hill that, and I said this 5 months ago when it happened, I thought he should have went for that Indiana job. We both said it on this podcast.
Yeah, we were on that.
Went for that Indiana job. He should have went back to college. Now, he's going to have a pretty cushy job here as president. Seems like they don't have any intention of getting rid of him. They clearly think he's a really smart dude. I don't know whose nephew he is, because, when you talk – and listen, I'm a Brad Stevens hater. I'll just admit it. I have been since the beginning, because it's like we anointed him as, this great coach, because he took this, Isaiah Thomas, Jason Tatum – Jason Tatum,
Terry Rozier.
And Terry Rozier team to the Eastern Conference Finals, and it's like, bro, like they didn't beat anybody to get there. I know they gave LeBron a run for his money, but nobody thought that they had a chance to beat.
And that Cavs team was so bad.
But even then, nobody thought that they were going to actually beat them. They did give him a run for their money, so I'll give them that. But the way that we anointed him, and it's just been disappointment after disappointment after disappointment. After that, and even like if you look at last year's team, look at this. Like if you look back at their postseason run from last year, right? So they sweep Philly in the first round. Philly, obviously, they had a bunch of issues going on. We're kind of discarding that team. Second round, they played Toronto, right? It goes 7 games against a team that was not anywhere near as good as them from a talent perspective. We see how Toronto was this year. Clearly, they should not have been that, and granted, Toronto was a little bit better last year with Gasol and Ibaka. But they still had VanVleet, Lowry, Siakam, a lot of the same guys, Nick Nurse, who clearly outcoached Stevens, right? But Stevens wins it because of Tatum and Brown and the talent that he had. So he moves on. He faces Miami, who just got, same team just got swept in the first round. This was not a great Miami team. We're probably looking back on them a little differently than we felt last year. And guess what? In that Eastern Conference Finals, and we said this on the podcast when it happened, he got his ass kicked by Eric Spoelstra, albeit all Eric Spoelstra is a great coach, and so is Nick Nurse. But to get your ass handed to you like that, when we're supposed to revere you as this great coach, he clearly was not this great coach. We clearly overrated him in the media. So I think it's interesting that now he's transitioning to president of basketball operations. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But it's no surprise now. This team is an interesting case study, right? Because we don't know what's going to happen with Marcus Smart. Kemba Walker has, you know, turned in one of the worst contracts in the league, right? And now we've got this Brown and Tatum situation where we're looking at it and we're like, these are two young guys who we both really like, right? We like both of them. They're really good. But is that duo good enough to compete in a league where every team has a duo now, right? So it's not like right. they're the only team with a good duo. You know, are they good enough to compete this year? They were not. So it's no surprise that they made changes.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, we knew Brad Stevens was not going to continue to be the head coach. And you said it earlier when I sent you the news, you said this is a nice way of firing someone.
Yeah,
and I thought that was incredibly accurate because how many times did we talk about them on this podcast with the Indiana job? Because we knew that he was not going to be the head coach after this season with them, you know, not being able to get over the hump and then having this horrible downfall to the seven seed and getting bounced in the first round. It was only a matter of time. They're, you know, the Celtics are obviously doing great PR. They're saying he's tired of coaching.
Right.
You know, they move him into the front office because, like, you know, obviously they like him as a person. And I think he kind of missed out on all the good college jobs, right? So, and even though Duke opened up today, which we'll get to, he had no chance of getting a Duke job. So,
sure.
You know, it was kind of like, hey, man, you know, we'll give you a shot in this role because we really like you and we do think you're a good basketball mind, but you can't coach this team anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that was the real conversation that happened. If anyone was tired, it was Danny Ainge. Yes. There's no other reason for him to step down besides him being tired of doing this. So that makes sense. Brad Stevens moving into the front office for any other reasons besides them telling him that he wasn't welcome as a coach.
Got to go.
Yeah, you know, so there's going to be some good candidates out there, though. Who knows what happens with Nate McMillan? He's done a great job for the Hawks, but it doesn't guarantee that they'll keep him. He could be on the market. Lloyd Pierce, who was fired by the Hawks earlier this season, is on the market. I still think he got a little bit raw of a deal, but can't argue with the results that the Hawks obviously have gotten from the coaching change. So there, you know, there's going to be some good guys on the market here. Obviously you have those top level assistants like Sam Cassell and guys like that who are going to be available. You always look to the college ranks. Yeah.
Chauncey Billups. Why is he a head coaching candidate every year? I know he's a TV analyst and he was a great point guard, Norman. And then that translates a lot of the time. It seems like his name is always comes up as a candidate.
Always comes up, and I'm not really sure that he wants to coach. I think he'd be, you know, he took the GM. Remember the Cavs thing? He interviewed for that. He took that pretty seriously, but typically he doesn't interview for these coaching jobs or really end up being a serious candidate, but his name does always get floated around. Yeah. I think he'd be a good coach. He has a great basketball mind.
Yeah, he's with the Clippers currently.
Yeah, so you know, it certainly could be one of those guys. I'm hoping it's a black coach, whichever of the great black coaches that are available. I hope it's one of them. Honestly, I think this is an opportunity for a guy like Jaylen Brown, who is very outspoken about equality and racism and social justice, for him to speak out and be like, listen, you guys need to hire a black coach. Like to get some racial equity up here, especially in Boston, who has gotten a very bad rap for the and rightfully so about a lot of the racism that happens with their sports teams. So, you know, I'd like to see that happen. But yeah, this was, I'm not as harsh on Brad Stevens as a coach as you are. I do think he was overrated. I don't think he's a bad coach. I don't think he's the reason that they were bad, right? Like, hardly ever is that the case, but like, I don't think he's one of those coaches that was holding this group back. Mm-hmm. But I think there was this talent here was a little overrated. Like you said, Kemba Walker has been atrocious since he got hurt.
Oh yeah.
And getting older. So, and they never really figured out their front court as far as like the four and five spots after Horford left. Horford and the Morris twin. They never really figured those two spots out after those guys left. And this is like, I saw all of this coming. I told a guy in our group message who's no longer in our group message, but I told a guy 3 or 4 years ago when they had Kyrie, I told him like this, the Sixers would be better than the Celtics in 5 years.
Yeah.
And regardless of what happens to the Sixers this year in the playoffs, they're light years ahead of the Celtics, if you ask me, because now if you look back at that Celtics team, not only did they have at the time, they had Kyrie, Rozier, they had Tatum and Brown, they had Morris, they had Horford, you know, and a lot of those contracts were expiring. Obviously, Horford, Rozier, and Morris were out of there within the next season after I had the discussion with this guy. And then Kyrie bounced the year after that. And they were just kind of scrambling, you know, to plug the pieces. And they plugged those holes with Daniel Tice for a little bit, Tristan Thompson, you know, and Kemba Walker, who at first seemed like a good replacement for Kyrie, but hasn't been, you know, obviously he's not as good as Kyrie. And he hasn't been since after that first season that he was there. So, you know, it is what it is. Celtics might have to hit the reset, and it sucks because when you look back, they had this promising future, right? They had two young studs, a ton of draft picks, Kyrie Irving, you know what I mean? And all this, all these assets to really put together a championship contending team, and they never really did it.
Yep, absolutely. And that was the, always the knock on Danny Ainge was he had this draft capital and didn't use it, right?
Yeah.
So that Kyrie team, I would probably put a lot of that blame on Kyrie.
I do too.
For that Milwaukee series. But Brad, you know, was a part of it. And this is something we've said, like he was a great peacetime coach, not a good wartime coach, and didn't know how to handle conflict, exactly. It seemed like. So maybe the front office suits him better.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was always his biggest issue, was like handling bigger egos. He's the guy who can take scraps and make them look better than scraps. But when he actually has talent, he kind of gets exposed. So
agree. I think 100%. We agree there.
So let's close out today's show talking about a really great coach in Coach K.
Yep.
Retiring just about a month or so after Roy Williams announced his retirement at UNC. So the two biggest schools in college basketball will now have new head coaches. John Shire is set to replace Coach K, which like pretty much everybody kind of knew that it would either be Shire or someone else from the Duke tree. Shire has been his top assistant for a couple of years now. So no one who didn't have a Duke degree was getting this job or didn't play for Coach K was getting this job. And rightfully so. I would have liked to see like Jeff Capel or something like that.
No.
You're not Jeff Capel. Right. He's at Pitt now, isn't he?
I love Jeff Capel.
He's at Pitt now. Yeah.
I want him to stay at Pitt.
I love Jeff Capel too. So that would have been cool to see him come back to Duke. But I understand why you'd want to keep him.
Yes.
Bobby Hurley has had some success with, you know, Buffalo and Arizona State. That would have been a nice. But this was Shire's job for them to give it to him. But back to the legend, Coach K, you know, storied long career. You know, obviously he was a Bobby Knight apprentice, you know, in his younger days, took over a Duke program and kind of built it from the ground up, right? Like,
yes,
they weren't like a powerhouse until he got there, and the names of guys that he's produced throughout his time is too long to even try to rattle off on this podcast. 4 or 5 national championships. Did we find out how many he actually has?
He's got five.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought the last one was the fifth. So 5 national championships, which is up there for one of the most in college basketball. We say goodbye to a legend. And as we always like to do on sports talk shows, where does he rank in your all-time coaching rankings amongst all sports? So, like, in all of sports, where does he fall for you?
Yeah, so all of sports, he's probably top 10, is I would say at a minimum, right? He's probably the second best men's college basketball coach ever. I would have him, you know, only behind Wooden probably. You know, the five championships. He's got the most wins of all time. You know, just he, you know, he, his resume speaks for itself. We don't really need to talk about it much. You know, John Shire now, like, you know, and we knew this was coming, right? He was the coaching waiting. You know, you mentioned Jeff Cable. I was going to say I'm glad it wasn't Jeff Cable. There was a time when, you know, when he took that pit job, we were thinking, you know, he's getting groomed up to take that eventual Duke job. But, you know, I think John Shire was always a Duke favorite and one of Coach K's favorites. So it makes sense. Yeah. You know, I'm not sure that he replicates the success Coach K had. There's almost no chance he does. But if he can have a long career, then he'll be successful. So yeah, I've got Coach K definitely in the top 10. He does not crack my top five, which I do have listed for you.
Okay, so give me your top 10.
I got top five.
Okay, yeah, give me your top five.
Top five. You want them all right now? All
right. Yeah.
So I went five. I went with Nick Saban, who college. Okay. Yeah, he's got seven championships, you know, and not only does he have the six at Alabama, he also got one at LSU, I think. You know, having, you know, two different schools gets you extra points on the resume. So I've got Saban fifth. Fourth, I think you're going to actually – fourth, I've actually got Phil Jackson. 11 championships, you know, he might get – you know, but that's an insane number of championships, especially for someone who coached in the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah.
You know, he did have Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal. So maybe you dock him a tick or two as a coach, but I don't think we can deny how successful his systems were and his methods. So he has to be in the top five for me anyway. So I got him fourth.
Agreed.
Third, I've actually got Gino Auriemma here.
Nice.
So 11 championships at UConn, just like, you know, an extended run of dominance. Like really, we haven't seen much in the rest of sports. So I had to put him in the top five. Two, I've got Bill Belichick. To win six Super Bowls is kind of an insane feat. Like, no one has ever done that before. I know that he's kind of maybe losing points now because Brady's having success elsewhere, but I don't think that we can take away the six Super Bowls. So he's number two for me. And then one, I think, is John Wooden. 10 championships in 12 years. I know it was a, you know, maybe a little earlier of an era that we maybe give a little less credit for, and the players he had were really good, right? So Lou Alcindor, a.k.a. Kareem, and Bill Walton, you know, he had really good teams. But also, like, just the impact he's had. Some of the books he's written are fantastic for coaches. If you're interested in becoming a coach, I would read some. So I've got him number one. So I went Saban five, or I'll go one, Wooden two, Belichick three, Geno four, Phil Jackson, and five, Nick Saban.
Yeah. Okay. Very good list. Love it. I also did not have Coach K in my top 10.
Yeah.
Although one thing I do want to touch on, I said top 10. He's in my top 10. Not in my top five. I had him at seven.
Okay. That's about where I have him, yeah.
Yeah, and also, you know, one of the things I want to give him credit for was his revival of Team USA. Because, honestly, that moved him up in my rankings more than not more than the Duke, but like that, I think I gave him some bonus points for it because Team USA was drowning a little bit until they brought him in. And, like, granted, you know, he got Kobe and LeBron and like, the greatest players in the world. But he also put a system together for those guys to coexist. You know, Team USA was throwing talent together in 2004, and that did not work one bit. You know, so, you know, him reviving that team in 2008 and so on, the transformation he's gone through as a coach at Duke, from like his recruiting and the types of teams that he's had, is rare amongst a coach so like as old as him, right? Like,
yes,
the saying is always, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Coach K was never one to shy away from adapting to the times.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, the one and done rule, he changed his approach. He started getting the best recruiting classes in the country, some of the best players in the country. One of the knocks was that he didn't produce good pros. No one can say that about him now.
No.
As Duke is all over the NBA All-Star weekends, and some of the top players in the league are from Duke now. So,
yep.
So he made my top 10. He was at seven for me. But my top five, was I had Pop at five.
Okay.
Greg Popovich is one of my favorite coaches of all time. You know, and granted, I know he had Tim Duncan, but he's, other than that, he's relatively won all of his championships without high caliber talent, like highly regarded superstar players, right? Besides Duncan and Robinson the first time, you know, and Duncan really throughout his career, he's kind of had to make do with what he had. We've seen him turn role players into longtime NBA players. Like, look at Danny Green. Yes. Before he got to the Spurs, he was in the G League. He was on the deepest bench seat on the Cavs when with LeBron, right? Like, early on in his career, he was bouncing around, and then he just blossoms with the Spurs, and they win a championship. Go to two finals. So, like, those are the kind of things for me. It's like, look at all the role players who and guys who no one really expected to be superstars who turned out to have very long careers after playing with the Spurs. And then Kawhi Leonard was a 15th pick and is now one of the like top seven or eight players in the league, depending on where you rank him.
Yep.
You know, and he was just a defender at first. He was not this 25 point per game scorer. So I give Pop a lot of credit for what he's done with the least amount possible of all these coaches that we have, as far as like in these top tens, top fives, he's probably had the least amount of talent. So he's five for me. At four, I had Saban.
Hmm.
Nick Saban, I don't, you know, for all the reasons you said earlier, so I'm not going to beat a dead horse there. I had Belichick at three.
Okay.
I had Phil Jackson at two.
All right.
So a little bit higher. I mean, 11 championships, and you obviously, I think the only thing that keeps him from being one is the fact that he had Kobe, Shaq, and Michael Jordan. But like those guys didn't win anything. Well, other than Shaq, those guys for the most part didn't win anything without him. Like of those three guys, one of them got a ring without him. And if we're being honest, Shaq got his off of the back of D Wade. So like, you know, in that Miami season. So not to say that, and I want to be very clear that he was not the sole reason that those guys won championships. It's out. It's 100% a partnership, right? Like that's where it's always it's a partnership between the players and the coaches. And Phil Jackson was the perfect coach for the superstar players. Like he got Kobe and Jordan, to understand that, you know, scoring less, a little bit less, and winning is more important than, you know, you being a 30 point per game scorer just because you can be, you know,
I'm not sure I got Kobe to understand that.
I don't think he got him to understand all of it, but like sure. To an extent, right. You know what I mean? Kobe, sure. Kobe did make his sacrifices here and there. And Kobe always said, you know, yeah, I'm a scorer, but I'm a winner first. Nice. And I think a lot of that comes from Phil Jackson because, and the times that they butted heads early on in his career, like that second stint that he had with Phil, you know, I think is where he kind of really grew into his own in that case.
I agree.
And then of course I also had Wooden at number one.
Yeah.
He's the greatest coach of all time. I have his book that you mentioned. I have one of his books in my office in the room behind me, or around the corner here. So, I also recommend it for anyone interested in coaching. He's and for me, it's like when you read those books, he's not going to like have a ton of like X's and O's for you and stuff like that, right? Because times change. His is more of like the philosophy of coaching, things that stand the test of time. So regardless of what you think about the era that he coached in or the players that he had, like what John Wooden was as a coach, is everlasting. And I think like almost anyone who goes into coaching, especially in basketball, but really any sport, should look back at some of the things that John Wooden valued, because typically that generates success, in most cases. So John Wooden is like the gold standard of coaches for me. I had him at number one too.
We're on the same page as always.
Yeah. All right, so that closes out today's topics. For those of you guys, again, listening in on the audio platforms, thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. episode 70 now. Make sure you guys hit that review. That ratings button. Yep. Leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe. Those of you watching on the channel, leave us comments. You guys did an excellent job of that on the last video. We appreciate that. Give us your top five coaches. Give us your Nets versus Bucks predictions in the comments. We read that stuff and go through that stuff. And for those of you, if you follow us on social media, you can see my Twitter tag on your screen, and you can follow our All In Pod, Facebook, All In Network, and Instagram, All In Network. You can follow us on those platforms as well. And send us questions there. Send us comments, debate topics, whatever, things that we can talk about on the show. And, you know, who knows? We could even have you do like a little voice message, have you record it, and we'll play it on the pod. So something to keep in mind. We want fan interaction. We got a lot of it in our last episode, and we love it. So we appreciate you guys showing us some love, and hope you continue to do so.
Yeah, that stuff always goes a long way, more than you guys probably even realize. So the comments are great. Subscribe to the channel. Turn on notifications too. That way you know exactly when we're going live. We've been doing that more and more. We're going to keep doing that more and more as the playoffs go on. So I will turn on that notification button if I were you, and review us and maybe refer us to a friend or two who also likes sports. So we appreciate you guys listening though.
Yes. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode. We will see you guys again next week. Have a great night.
Peace.